This is part one of a two-part podcast.
I'm Edward Norton. No, not that one, the other one, and I love pies. No, not that kind, the other kind. Hermes is an old-school forum packed full of friendly people who occasionally give out a slice of pie. You'll never forget your first slice of pie. It made me feel so good, I had to buy a whole pie so I could share the love. Oh, and there's apples too. Sign up at permies.com to join in the world of homesteading and permaculture, and you too might get a slice of pie.
All right, looks like we're going. So today, I'm going to focus on, and I've got one other guest showing up any second now, but there were some technical difficulties, but I'm going to go ahead and get started. I want to talk about my recent trip to Portland. I went to a whole bunch of potlucks, like, I don't know, four or five potlucks. And the stuff I saw there was some very profound connections that I made, some very profound things that I learned that I think change everything. Well, it's kind of like a thing that we've always known. But anyway, it's an angle that I've never talked about in this podcast, which with more than 700 podcasts, it seems like there can't be too much that I've never talked about. But I want the upside to be gardening gardeners. And the thing that I observed, as I was getting to ladder potlucks, I was telling people about it. I was calling it the poisoned pear. And because I saw a lot of pear trees while on these adventures. And it's like, look at this pear tree. And but the thing that I saw, the thing that's important, the thing that I'm trying to convey today is at no point did any person ever express that it was sad, but I just kind of felt like I was harvesting subtext that they did not say. So that's another thing too, is like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I misread everything. But it was, the simplest version of it goes like this. I saw people who were proudly showing me their pear tree that had a lot of pears on the ground going yucky. And the person talking about the pear tree seemed to be, to me, kind of a little bummed out, a little sad, a little depressed. And it was because things in their life have been set in such a way that they cannot preserve all of the harvest, or they're going to not, or whatever. But it's even richer than that. And so I kind of feel like so many of the people that I visit with do not currently have a garden, or they're just getting started, but they, you know, they dream of someday having a pear tree. And then on this trip to Portland, I saw a lot of pear trees, and every single pear tree came with a story. And mostly the story was about the pears on the ground that were getting yucky. And that's what this podcast is in a way about, but really what I want to talk about is gardening gardeners, which would be the solution. The thing that I see is the solution. The thing that, I don't know, I guess most people would see as crazy, but to me it seems so simple and clear and obvious. And that would be gardening gardeners. So, I'm gonna do my very best to not reveal details. But I saw so many amazing things and good things. Maybe I'll have to circle back another day, make it another whole podcast. But it goes like this. So, for example, this one woman in particular was telling me about the pear tree. And and there's a lot I don't know, so I'm going to make up some stuff to make the story work. I think that there are three houses there all in a bunch with a giant garden between the houses and kind of surrounding the houses. And I think that she's in charge of these three houses. I think she might even own all three houses. I'm not sure. But I get the impression that what she wanted was to have all of the occupants of these houses be gardeners. So I think she rented out the rooms. So there's a total of like maybe eight people, and she's one of the eight people, and she wanted to build this community of gardeners. So everybody that rented a space has professed to being a gardener. Like, that's the only way they were allowed in, is to be a gardener. And then I kind of got the impression of, and, you know, she told stories and she talked about stuff. And again, I think 90 to 95% of what I'm about to say is what I felt in the subtext. And so, I kind of get the impression that, you know, she wanted it to be all gardeners, that they would all be out there gardening and they'd all be enjoying the harvest. But it's like this pear tree, for example, is just one example. As I was there at that moment, nobody besides her in the community is touching these pears. So she is consuming a lot of pears fresh, but she can only eat so much. And she mentioned to me that she would put them up, except that she still has pears left over from last year. Like, you know, canned pears from last year. And she's, you know, also got dried pears. She's got a ton of dried pears still that she hasn't eaten from last year. And so it's kind of like, it seems silly. At the same time, she's got a worky job she has to go do. None of the other people in her community seem to want the pears. Maybe a couple of them have grabbed one or two to eat fresh. Maybe. But there's a couple of other, there's even more stories. This story goes even deeper on the pear tree with just this one situation. And it is that, she's reached out to more than 20 people, like in the neighborhood, to take pears, and none of them want them. Then she found out about an organization in Portland that's called called a gleaning organization, or a gleaning group, or, you know, Portland gleaning. I don't know what it is, but the gleaning organization, the idea is that if you have a bunch of extra fruit or vegetables or a bunch of extra food on your plot, they will come and harvest all of it. And then the best stuff goes to the food bank, and the rest is divvied up with the volunteers that came out to harvest it all. And so she's like, perfect. Oh, I've got mountains of food. I've got so much food that isn't being consumed. So come on down. And so she contacted them, and they said, we are so glad you contacted us. We will send a crew right over to get all that. We just first need you to give us $350. And she was like, why would I pay you? You guys get tons of grants and stuff. Why would I pay you to come get like $2,000 worth of food? And it's like, that's how it is. So she said, no, thank you. And I think she's going to just take all the pears that drop and put them into a compost pile and compost them. I don't want to talk about so many of the other garden stuff I saw there and everything, but I'm not even going to talk about any of the other things today. What I want to talk about today is the whole thing of like, I kind of want to insert myself into the lives of all the people living there. Not only this woman that is, I believe, possibly the owner, who tried to build a community of gardeners who would enjoy this bounty of pears so much that no pear would ever hit the ground. or that if a pear ever hit the ground, it would be scooped right up because it's precious. Instead of what I observed, which is like, all like 90% of the pears for that year are going to go to waste. Like they're going to be composted in the end, I guess. Which I kind of think is a bit of a sad story. And that's kind of a big part of today's podcast is this sadness that I see, that I saw around so many different pear trees, not just that one, but like a lot of pear trees. And all these different people have a different story. And I think that the real answer is gardening gardeners. And so I kind of feel like, okay, so I shared with you the sadness that comes from these pears, which are like the ultimate goal of gardeners and the ultimate goal of permies. It's like beautiful, delicious, dreamy pears are going to waste. And I just kind of feel like, I feel like that's sad, and maybe I'm projecting when I observe these people, but I felt like all of these people with the pear trees, I feel like all of them were packing a dose of sad because the pears were just falling on the ground, and then the stuff that hadn't fallen on the ground yet, they stood right there knowing that almost all of it's going to be wasted. So gardening gardeners, the permaculture boot camp is one example of what I call gardening gardeners. So in the permaculture boot camp or in any gardening gardeners program, the idea is that a bunch of people will come together, and for 40 hours a week they will work on gardening, natural building, permaculture stuff, homesteading stuff, stuff like that, you know, but they're going to do it all together. They'll do it all together, basically. So when you go out and you nurture the garden, you're doing it with a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
Not only that, but when the harvest comes on, the whole group goes out there and gets it. And then the whole group transforms that into meals or something. I mean, sure, a lot of it can be eaten raw right out there in the field. And that's wonderful. But at the same time, it's like potatoes and carrots and onions. Like, I have never eaten an onion in the field, even though Walla Walla sweets can be tempting to do that, and I've seen people eat them in the field. Uh-huh. And I was like, all right, you can eat a Walla Walla sweet onion like an apple. I choose not to, but people do it. All right. But the thing is that, you know, you're going to make a soup, or you're going to bake it, or you're going to make French fries, or, you know, do some deep fat frying or whatever, a meal. You're going to transform what comes from the garden into a meal, and then you're going to put some of it up. And I kind of feel like in a gardening gardeners program, like the permaculture boot camp, then it happens. It's done, and you're out there doing it with a whole bunch of other people that are just as keen on this stuff as you are. And so now you're doing it. Now you're living this life that you signed up for. All right. Going back to the story of this woman and the seven other people in this gardening community, I'm going to pretend that she is sad. Maybe I'm sure that if she was in on this call right now, she'd wag her finger at me and tell me how wrong and dumb I am. And then it's like, and I, even though I might be absolutely right, that same person would probably still tell me I'm wrong. But let's just explore what I observed. And I think that she's bummed out because she made this community of gardeners with the idea that she'd be out there gardening with these wonderful people, you know, during the gardening season. And then when the pears are on, they would all go out there and get pears and do stuff with the pears.
Yeah.
And instead, I kind of, the message that I heard is that when she's out there gardening, she's pretty much always doing it all by herself, which sounded sad. And on top of that, these people that were all living there that were gardeners were, it sounded like for the most part, for a few of them, it might be 100, like there's 0% gardening happening. For some of them, there is some gardening that's happening, but it's not as much as you would think. And I also want to go back to like when I was in Seattle, I made a community. Everybody that was in the house had taken a PDC at some point. And we had garden space and they were all glad to tell me what to do in the gardens. But only one of them ever came out and helped me in the gardens. And I think we had like 11 people in the house. And so just me and one other person, and I probably did 10 times more than that one other person. And so it's like such a weird thing to have. And when they all came in, they were all like, I'm all about gardening and permaculture.
Yeah.
And I think it's true. I think that they are. And that's part of what I want to talk about today. But so I want to say, if the people in that house that I founded that community and the people that were in this other house that I'm talking about that I visited in Portland, if all of these people were in a gardening gardeners program, like the permaculture boot camp, then I think that they would actually go out and garden. And I think that they want to. And then the people that are gardening would feel a lot less lonely. But what I think is happening is like, I'm going to just make up a fictitious gardener. I'm going to name my fictitious gardener Bob with one O. And then Bob is going to have a worky job. And Bob is all about gardening. Bob is a gardener. And Bob has grown some gardens in his day. And now Bob has a worky job. And then, of course, once in a while, he has to put a little bit more time in the worky job. But also there's the commute. Bob has to drive to work and back. And so just with work-related things, let's say he got 40 hours of work plus maybe a few more hours of, like, helping out at work, plus the average commute is 30 minutes each way. That's the average American commute. And so maybe Bob's got 5 hours a week in to commute. And then what Bob does is, like, he lives in the city of Portland. And he's got to take a bunch of that money to pay his rent. And he's got to try to save some up because if he loses his job, he could be in a pickle that costs. So he's like, he needs that job. He needs that money. He needs to get out of debt. He needs to pay his rent. He needs to make his car payment. He needs to pay for his insurance, which is high because he lives in the city. And by the way, driving in Portland sucks, man. I don't know if every city is like this, or maybe I've just gotten soft being out in Montana so long. But it's like everybody drives so fast, and it's like, I don't know, the streets are so narrow, the parking spots are super narrow, and everybody is zipping by, and it's like you avoid collisions constantly. And I was driving the speed limit on a street in Portland, and somebody passed me. I mean, like, I'm in a neighborhood street and it's narrow and there's no room, and they raced past me. Like, maybe they must be going to the hospital or something. I don't know. But they passed, and it's like, you don't pass people on a neighborhood street. And it's not like I was putt-putting. I'm getting older. Look at all this gray hair, you know. So I'm some old grandpa guy, I guess. And like, oh, I'm going 4 miles an hour. It's like, around me. No, I was going the speed limit. So it was scary. You know, the driving there is spooky. But all right, so we've got this guy. He's got his worky job. He's got a commute. And at this, it does seem like, boy, Portland gets traffic. Yuck. I don't know how many times all of the traffic just stopped. And we're like waiting until something changed so we can move again. But okay. 40 hours plus a few plus five. And then this person is probably going to eat at restaurants a lot. And that whenever not eating at a restaurant, Bob is going to go and get groceries at the grocery store, which I think I went to the world's tiniest Whole Foods while I was there. It was kind of a weird experience. But it was very, very busy, and tiny. But all right. So I'm going to pretend Bob shops at that Whole Foods. All right. So Bob is a gardener. He loves when he identifies himself as a gardener. But at the same time, it's like in order to be able to pay his bills, he needs a job.
Yeah.
And so he works at his job 40 hours a week, plus all that other time. And it's like once he's done doing his grocery shopping and eating at restaurants and, you know, whatever errands he's got to run by driving around and things like that, there's not a lot of time left to be a gardener. And then on top of that, I'm going to pretend that Bob's job is like both good and shitty at the same time. Like there's things about it that are good and there's things about it that are like really piss him off. So Bob's looking to decompress. And, I like to think that when you are in a gardener's program, like the permaculture boot camp,
yes.
I'm going to say, so Samantha, you've been here a fair amount. You come here once every couple of months.
Yeah.
And you jump in with the boots and hang out and do stuff. I would have to say that there's probably no decompression. I mean, I do know that there have been some people that were not a fit, but they didn't stick around very long. But I also know that there have been people that have been here for years. And so, and I kind of feel like, it is generally a soul building thing every day.
I think the folks who are here feel really lucky to get to have this life. I asked one of the guys one day, you know, how are you doing today? And he's like, oh, every day is a Saturday. You know, like that's
for most homesteaders. Cool. That's really true because most homesteaders, they have a worky job and a long commute. And all of their homesteading is done on the evenings and weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So I'm going to say Bob on the evenings and weekends, Bob's primary thing that he's thinking about is he needs to decompress and try to rinse away the day because it wasn't all hearts, flowers, and rainbows.
Yeah.
And so while there are some nice things about his work, there's also some things that are a little too heavy. And that's why it's called a job. And I think that what happens is that he has no time left at the end of the week for gardening, which is his thing, which is how he defines himself. So he does zero.
Hmm.
And so this is, and maybe I'm wrong, but I just made this a
plot
as a fictitious character, but I kind of feel like in the permaculture community that I created, I feel like that's what I saw from a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because in that permaculture community, I rented out the room. So people had to come up with the money every month to pay rent.
Yeah.
And so with gardening gardeners, with the permaculture boot camp, people don't pay rent.
Mm-hmm.
They get unlimited food, a large part of which is provided by the booths that are here before. And then they don't have to pay rent for a bunk, which, in a large part, was created by the booths of the before times. And so they've got a bunk and they've got food, and they're going to do stuff, gardening and natural building and permaculture and homesteading. They're going to do all these things to support themselves, to feed themselves, to house themselves, and to provide for future people.
Yeah, and exactly. So, you made it free. You made them free to be able to build for the future. There's so many of us are stuck in a place where we have to make enough money to just get by. You've allowed folks to come into your world and be free of that money burden so that they can just build the future. I think it's a really special thing that you've created.
Well, and I do think that I am psychotically generous in this space, but I'm not, and as much as I'm doing it for, I'm trying to build a community out of people that are, have at least some small degree of industrious to them.
Yes.
As opposed to most communities seem to be built out of people that are like gonna coast. They're not gonna, and it's like that, and I've observed that a lot. But really what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get to the point that this is a success, and I will call it Gardening Gardeners.
Uh-huh.
I will write that book, and then hopefully there will then be 100,000 different homesteads in the United States that will offer a Gardening Gardeners program.
I think that's really neat.
That's what I'm trying to incubate this. And I think that there is a lot of homesteaders that would love to incubate pretty much the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's reasons why they don't, which is kind of like what I wrote about in the Skip book, like with Mike Ayler having more than 100 interns and they all went down the road.
Yeah. Well, what you've created here really allows people to take either path. If there is an industrious person who wants to come and be in the boot camp, they can live here and learn and, you know, grow their own food. And if there's somebody really just wants to coast, they have the opportunity to rent one of your beautiful cabins, which were built by the boot camp industrious people. So you really created both paths right here in this place, and it's all because you created the boot camp.
And I kind of think that this could be, once it is a success, it could be rubber stamped onto 100,000 other homesteads.
I think it could be. That'd be so cool.
Because I think that what I want is what a lot of homesteaders want, and the reason why they don't do it is because they do not want the drama.
Exactly.
Which is what Mike Ayler suffered from. And so he was like, I thought that these people would be great and I would will them my land, but instead it was just a giant drama festival. And it's like, okay, so how do you make it? And then the other thing is that so often a lot of the people who show up are like, yeah, I'm going to help, all right? I'm going to do your intern thing, you know? But, you know, I'm not really a morning person. So, you know, can we just wait a few hours? Like, I just need to kind of get my day started first. So what I have observed from a lot of these programs is people don't wake up or get started with their day until 11, and then they don't start working on projects until 2. And then they're pretty much done for the day at 4. And they call that an 8-hour day. And it's like, whereas at the same time, I see true homesteaders, they have a worky job, and they do all their homesteading on the evenings and weekends, and they're putting in a solid 40 hours a week on their homestead in addition to having a full-time job. And so it's kind of like, all right, how do we help everybody And that's where I'm going. And it's like, if I go back to the Portland community to this fictitious person named Bob, I kind of feel like what I want for Bob is I want to bring Bob, see that gal right there. Her name is Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
See, so you've got this, this spot up on the hill with a big sign. It's called Tuesday Terrace. That's because that's where Tuesday put her tent. But Tuesday is a person who came here and fell in love. And then when she was a boot, but she fell in love with somebody who was here for just a few weeks.
Mm.
And as far as I know, they're still together.
Mm, that's great.
So, but all right. Sorry, I just saw Tuesday there and I thought I would mention that. So, okay.
Have you ever wondered whether a particular book was really good or just so-so, and if you could trust the reviews online? When it comes to books related to permaculture, Permies has a large list of reviews for over 100 books. Perhaps you're considering a book for yourself or a friend, or you're just curious about what's out there. Stop by permies.com/book and take a look at the book review grid and read some honest reviews, and hopefully you'll find the next book to add to your collection.
I hereby proclaim, Bob's a fictitious person. I'm going to say that if Bob were to be part of a gardening gardeners program, that Bob would be 100 times happier than Bob is right now in Portland, Oregon. Because Bob would have either no bills or hardly any bills. I would say half of the boots that are here have zero bills.
That's really neat. That's amazing.
And some of them come with a car, so they still have to pay insurance. But because you're living out in the sticks of Montana, your car insurance now becomes like 85% cheaper.
Oh wow!
Yeah. Well, you live in a teeny tiny town.
I do. I don't have to pay much for car insurance.
Yeah.
But I didn't know it was more in a city. I guess it would be a lot more in a city.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because wow. I'm kind of amazed all the time at how anytime you're on the road, it's not, because I've met human beings. And so whenever I'm driving, I'm always thinking, like, how is it that you don't like all of our vehicles, like, should be shaped more like bumper cars.
Yeah.
Because I've met human beings, and yet I am always amazed. And I know, like, someone was driving me somewhere the other day, and they were getting so angry at the other drivers, which I'm thinking, like, boy, when I was in my 20s, I would get angry at other drivers. But now I'm just kind of like, no, go ahead. I kind of developed a form of apathy. And, but it's like, having met people, I just kind of feel like I'm amazed that it's not constant bumper cars going wherever you're going. I'm actually kind of impressed by humanity being able to drive in a way that it's not bumper cars all the time. But in Portland, it kind of feels like I had 20 times more close calls per hour of driving.
Ooh.
Yeah, and it just, everything seemed perpetually scary and, you know, dangerous. So, yeah, I can imagine that insurance in Portland is high.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bob will be 20 times happier in a gardening gardeners program because he'll be gardening. And then not only that, but when he goes out to garden, he's gardening with a whole bunch of other people that are also keen on gardening. And then, and I've shared stories in this podcast before about people who have a giant garden and everything in the garden rots. The food, like 95% of the food is never consumed.
Yeah.
And it has to do with, like, and I think that the story I shared before is a guy I met who grew a giant organic garden, but his wife and kids protested the garden.
Oh.
And they took on a vow or something that the three of them would never eat anything from the garden, and demanded to eat from. And this is what the guy told me.
It's terrible.
Domino's delivery.
Oh.
McDonald's, you know, Scottish cuisine.
Yeah, right.
And Taco Bell, so Mexican cuisine.
Well.
So, I kind of. And so then he said basically it all, he thought his family would be into it.
Yeah.
And instead it backfired.
Hmm.
And, okay. There's a person here who's saying, I live in an apartment with a north facing balcony that gets no direct sun. So I miss gardening. And so for this person, I want this person to be aware of a Gardening Gardeners program and then someday leave this apartment and go to a Gardening Gardeners program. And because I miss gardening, but I think that if you were to be gardening with other gardeners and harvesting with other gardeners and eating with other gardeners, I think that that is going to be something to miss even more, or something to enjoy even more, to savor even more. I think it's going to be so much more soul building. But it seems like a lot of people who live in the city, and I'm going to include Bob in this pile. So I'm going to say Bob is barely getting by, living hand to mouth. Bob's not really getting ahead financially, but Bob is paying bills and paying bills and paying bills and paying bills and is perpetually exhausted and is perpetually trying to erase the day. Mm. And all of Bob's focus and all of Bob's life is all about the job and trying to mitigate the after effects of the job. And then trying to basically exist and be okay and be like, you know, going to restaurants all the time and buying food at a grocery store, even though there's pears on the pear tree at home right now that Bob is not harvesting. Okay.
I think it has a lot to do with what someone values, because if you deeply value the level of health and nutrition that you get when you get the fruit off of the tree or you pull the carrot out of the soil, it's a different food than what you can buy at the Safeway or get from a restaurant. So I think if you value that social camaraderie of getting together with other people in the restaurant, then that's going to have more value. But for me, I don't want to eat at a restaurant. I mean, I'll go out to restaurants with my friends because they're eating there. But I don't eat that kind of food. I mean, I eat out of my own garden for almost 6-8 months now. I've had basically nothing except what I've grown or my friends have grown. And to me, that's food. It's the food that you buy at the store isn't even food anymore. Because I've been, you know, I'm kind of spoiled now. I get to eat real food. So I think if it was really valuable, somebody creating a level of health for themselves, then it wouldn't even be a question. So I think it kind of comes down to what's important to you. And if somebody's choosing the grocery store and the restaurant, it may be that there's other values that they're getting from those choices. Maybe. Or maybe they just have no one to garden with.
I think that's as you were talking, it made me think of like, I don't know, 20 other tangents to go on. But I think that's kind of the key. And part of it is the whole thing of like, one of the things that I've thought of recently in the last few years is that, cause I kind of feel like when we talk about the math of permaculture and gardening, and when we talk about the joy of the Gardening Gardeners program and stuff like that and the soul buildingness of it, there is one place that a city has it way better than those of us that live out in the sticks. And that is the social thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, when people go on dates and stuff in the city, they're going to be super picky about who's going to be their long-term match.
Yeah.
And, like, I can do better than that. I can do 4% better than this. I can, you know, where – I know you're here. Where are you? I see you've got – is that
I
Felix
have
the Weiner
a small cat? And I'm sitting out in the Wheaton Labs gardens on the magnificent picnic table.
Okay.
In the beautiful Montana sunshine.
So that's yeah. – so we've got a lot
it
of cats.
And he just came over, so I'm holding him.
Yeah, that's Felix the Weiner cat. And Felix wants to be constantly held and pet. And then eventually Felix will enjoy being pet so much that he starts getting a little bitey. So,
oh, gosh. Well, he'll be put down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, like, you'll set him down.
Yes. I don't do biting.
Well, no. You said, and he'll be put down. Put, no, not no. a thing to say to a cat-type person, you
I'll
know.
Nice
I'm going to put you down. I want to put you down. It's like, no. Phrasing.
It's not okay. that bad to be a biter. I'm just not going to hold it.
Yeah, yeah, I discourage the biting. And so, but Felix desperately needs to be held and pet all the time. And so I'm not surprised. So I was just kind of thinking like, wait, you're holding a cat. Okay, all right, all right. So Felix the Weiner cat. Oh, damn it. Now I forgot what I was talking about. I saw you holding a cat. And
I'm sorry.
Got all
I put the away. No kidding.
Okay. In the city, people have a lot more dating options. And it's like we just can't compete with that way out in the sticks. And I do think
places to go. You know, I mean, it's like in a small town, there might be the one place to go out. But if you're in town, it's like, what do you want? Do you want to go to the pizza? Do you want to go to the rock and roll show? I mean, just going to the park is an event in the city because you get to sit around and watch a bunch of people.
So, like, in your town, there's the one place to go.
Yeah.
And if you go there, like you go there with a fella, then everybody in town knows.
And they'll talk to you about that every time they see you.
And it's like, you can't just go out on a date and find out whether you like this person. Instead, it's going to be more like, if I go out on a date, now I have to justify that choice with 100 other people later.
And if that, probably not even 100, and they all know the guy, too.
Yeah, yeah. And they know all his dark stories, which you're going to hear about in the next 24 hours over and over and over again. And so, whereas in Portland, you're far more anonymous. And so, but on top of that, I think what's going to happen is that, you're dating up. So I guess another way of looking at this is that if you're in a permanent relationship, you can find out just how permanent it is by going out to the sticks. Because, or maybe it's going to help it to be permanent because you got a good relationship with somebody and they're not going to be seeing other people that they're going to want to go hang out with. It's like you're the best person for 100 miles. Makes your relationship better, right?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay, but I do think, though, that there's a lot of people, like we have a podcast that's called The Click. And I think that a lot of people, it's like they only want to be spending time with other permaculture people, which is why when people come here for events or the boot camp or whatever, there seems to be so many marriages that come from people meeting here. And so I do think that that's another way of looking at it. Because I think that if you're in Portland, do you meet a lot of permaculture people that are – and then the other thing is that I think that the only people that are coming to the boot camp are at least willing to be industrious to a certain degree. which is a kind of another thing that I think is good to point out, is that so many homesteads and communities seem to be chock-a-block full of people that, you know, their 40-hour work week can be completed in about 5 hours, you know, and by can be, I mean, not really can be is not the right word, not the right phrase, more like it, that's all you're going to get this week. And it's like, there's a lot of that. I've been to so many places where it's really clear that, people are not doing anything. And I don't know. I feel like on a lot of, I've been going to so many potlucks lately and the conversation has come up a lot. And it's like, so when I was in Sandpoint, there was a couple there from a community up in Canada and we got to talking about community a lot. And there was another potluck where that's all they wanted to talk about the whole time I was there, was about community stuff. And I pointed out that how in Dominhur, they've got like 900 people, or at least the last I heard 900. It's probably more than that now. But and they're all artists. And it's like, how is that even possible? Basically, everybody's day is scheduled for, I believe, like 14 or 15 hours a day. Wow. And so when you've got that much schedule, it's hard to get up to, you know, I guess, unkind things, or at least, you know, you've got 14 to 15 hours of authentic productivity. Whereas in some of these other communities, you don't have a time schedule and you joined that community with the idea that I can do all of the things, all the gardening and homesteading and permaculture. And instead you find out that when left to your own devices, you kind of don't do much of anything. You kind of, yeah, in fact, drift into maybe video games and getting stoned. I think, I'm going to make up something here, as I'm fond to do. I wonder what percentage of the American population currently spends all of their days, like for the last 6 months at least, just playing video games and getting stoned. Like that's who they are. And, so I think it's substantial, and I think four or five different potlucks I heard from parents of adult kids who are living with them, where it seems like that's what their kids do, and they're trying to think of a way to, you know, go in a different direction, and you know they got nothing, and. But that's, I mean, as much as I think that's a different story for every day, I do also think that some of those people have ended up in the boot camp. And while they, I don't think any of them have ever lasted more than 4 months, I think that half of them, like, went home and, or left here and actually had a life of substance. Like they dropped the video games and getting stoned permanently. Half of them just went back to video games and getting stoned. But I think, and I know of one story where the mom wrote to me and said, I sent you a boy and you sent me back a man. I love
that's sweet.
And he was here for, I think, only like, I want to say 5 or 6 weeks. He wasn't even here very long. But he lives very far away, so he had this round trip plane ticket. But basically, she has contacted me a few more times to say he got a job. He's helping out around the house. He repaired this, repaired that. He's helping me to fix this, and like now he does things. Like he needs to be doing things all day every day. And I don't know. I do think that that's a rewarding life.
That's wonderful.
And then this kind of reminds me of the permaculture superhero Elsiard Bouvier. And the story that you're here to share with us is a story very similar to Elsiard Bouvier, but I want to hold off on that just a moment. So I want to wrap up Bob and the woman who kind of has this gardener's community. And I want to say, I kind of feel like each of the gardeners in her community would be great to come into the permaculture bootcamp. I think that, or any gardening gardeners program. And I think that, their lives would feel 20 times better than how their life feels right now. And it would be easier and more delightful. It would have all the benefits and perks. It would be a giant goodness for them. But because then they would be gardening. Whereas right now they just identify as a gardener, but they don't. There she is. He works 12-hour days renovating old off-grid houses now.
Nice.
Trying to leave your name out of it. I was trying to be discreet. There she is.
That's really amazing.
And I love it when you send me the emails about the before and afters. I feel it's like such a perfect example of, I don't know, the power of the boot camp and the power of gardening gardeners. Thank you for posting that. Thank you for being in the chat. Thank you for paying attention to our little thingamabob today. Okay. I think that these gardeners are on a path that feels shallow and empty, and there's no gardening in it. I'm going to pretend, because I've met some of these people, I'm going to pretend that they feel sad, depressed, because they're living a gray life at a gray job, eating gray food, doing gray things, and existing. And I just feel like it's a bummer, and they identify as gardeners, and I think that they are gardeners, but that, you know, the non-gardening world has convinced them you have to do all these things. You have to. This is what you have to do. You have to have a place to live. You have to go buy your food. You have to have a working job to pay for all this shit. And so basically you have to shape your life to being a drone that is part of the machine. And it's like, I want so much more for them. I want something that's going to be fulfilling and soul building. And I feel like when I've visited with these people, I feel like the subtext is that they are bummed and depressed and they feel shitty.
Yeah.
So
I think it's a hard life. You know, I mean, some folks think that that's all that's available and that it just has to be that way. But I think it is a difficult path to, you know, I mean, it'd be hard for me to live in the city. I've done it, kind of, not really. But I've visited.
But I kind of feel like, okay, so they go to work. I'm going to guess that while they are at work, they are probably working elbow to elbow with other people.
Uh-huh.
And granted, they get along with some of those other people better than others. And it's like, which is part of the reasons why they got to kind of rinse away the day at the end of the day. But I kind of feel like with a gardening gardeners program. And the reason why 100,000 homesteaders would offer this is because 100,000 homesteaders are out there right now and they're doing all this all by themselves.
Yeah. And that's hard too.
Because of the way that they have set things up, whether they have animals or gardens or whatever it is that they're doing, whatever their homesteading is, they can never travel. And that's another podcast that I know that you and I and Bo have talked about. Like, we've got to get that recorded, and we still haven't done it.
Yeah.
But in a way, they can never travel. And if they do, they generally hire somebody to kill all their stuff while they're away.
Well, it's interesting that both of those problems really kind of have the same solution, which is just to find a way to build community where you are and, you know, you bring people out of the city and let them live the idyllic life. And it makes it so that you're more free to travel and know that your stuff will be looked after by somebody who cares about it.
But even more than that, I mean, I kind of get the sensation, too, that in a more traditional community, you would be leaving behind your stuff to be killed by somebody while you're away again. Only it would be somebody in your community that you now kind of live with. And it's like, why did you let everything die? And it's like, oh, well, this is why I kind of feel like the gardening gardeners community is really very different from the other community designs. But I kind of feel like with a gardening gardeners, so I'm trying to say there's 100,000 homesteaders out there right now that I think that if we can have one strong success with gardening gardeners, that they would want it too. And so, you know, I keep meeting all kinds of homesteaders that are doing it all alone and sometimes all alone and they have a family.
Yeah.
Still all alone.
Still alone. Just not by myself.
And only now because you're doing it, you're a servant to all these other people, in all kinds of ways. But that's another story for another day. And sometimes people live in community and they're still all alone.
Yeah.
In this respect. And it's kind of like, I kind of feel like with the Gardening Gardeners program, and that was another thing too, is I've seen so many farms and gardens where it was just a giant shithole. And it's like, there's garbage that has been sitting out like, oh, we might use this garbage someday, you know? And it's like, so I saw some of that. But I kind of feel like, at least with the Permaculture Bootcamp, a Gardening Gardeners program, the first Gardening Gardeners program, I think we run a pretty tight ship. I think we are very tidy and very picked up.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that is that a group of people goes out for 40 hours a week to keep everything sharp.
Yeah.
To follow the example, if you will, of Elziaud Bouvier, the permaculture superhero. Oh, look, there's a picture of our superhero. There he is.
That's beautiful.
Oh.
So if you haven't caught on, it's the man who planted trees. He went out in France and transformed what looked like a dead landscape that he could see old wells and old evidence of people used to live there. And he believed that if he planted hundreds and thousands of oaks and willows and poplars. I think a lot of oaks mostly, what I remember him planting. And he brought the valleys back. He brought the rivers back and the people came back.
He built
the laughing brooks and then the laughing children.
I don't know. I understand that it's a story based on a true story,
mm-hmm.
which is even better. But even if it isn't, it's the best permaculture superhero story ever.
I read that story when I was a kid and that was my dream. And I bought a beautiful place that I could see. It used to have a creek on it and I restored my creek doesn't run all year round, but it runs a lot longer. And I did his techniques.
You know, a thing I've heard 10 times this year, including in the last few weeks, is saying, I think that person read My Side of the Mountain and then went out and tried to do that.
Totally.
And, yeah.
That's a way different story, though. My Side of the Mountain.
It is. It is a way different story, but it's still a kind of permaculture story, maybe a little.
Oh, sure. It's just I don't think he restored it as much as lived in it.
Yeah, that's true.
But
that's
an true. Amazing story. Just I read that when I was a kid, too.
Yeah. So, but
all that stuff is inspiring.
Basically made community for thousands of people by planting trees. But yeah. All right.
This podcast is continued in part two.
Put Paul's brain on your plot. Do you have a hunk of land but don't know where to start? Do you have a world-changing permaculture idea and you need some feedback? Do you feel like the guy in overalls may inexplicably hold the keys to all your wildest permaculture and homesteading dreams? Well, you're probably wrong. But if you want to give it a go anyway, you can hire Paul for a consultation. He will be all yours for a whole entire hour. Schedule your Paulversation today at permies.com/consult. permies.com/consult.